greetings and welcome to It's About Florida. Joining us in the studio today, we have Rich Templin with the Florida AFL-CIO. Greetings.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
And we have Mr. Jack Oliver with Floridians for Immigration Enforcement. Mr. Oliver, greetings to you.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to be on the show.
So we wanted to talk today about what is happening in Congress. The immigration bill that we've been hearing a lot about in the news lately is now on the Senate floor, and this week it's being debated before the full Senate. And we wanted to focus on this issue because here in our state we have a large immigrant population, a large population of people who have come to this country illegally, and it's going to make a big impact on the lives of all Floridians. So I want to talk about this bill and first hear from both of you gentlemen on your perspectives about it. Mr. Oliver, let's start with you. What is this bill all about?
Well, this bill, in a nutshell, I think, is all about just importing cheap labor into the country. There's been a tsunami of money poured into Washington since 2007 to bring us to this day that I think over $1.5 billion have been spent by lobbyists since 2007 to get this bill passed. And the big Trojan horse in this bill is that over the next decade, we're going to have 33 million foreign workers competing with American workers. That's the 11 million. And if there's only 11 million, I don't think anybody really believes that number. It's going to be a lot higher than that. Plus, over 20 million new work visas. So I think that's going to be devastating to the American worker.
You know, when we talk about this bill in Congress, I guess we should outline kind of sort of what are some of the provisions in it, right? Mr. Templin, there's a pathway to citizenship there. It includes an expansion of what Mr. Oliver was just mentioning of the visa program for skilled and unskilled workers. And it also calls for increased border security. Talk a little bit about some of these specifics.
Well, I want to start off, though, by appreciating Mr. Oliver's concerns. The AFL-CIO has shared some of those concerns for over a decade on this issue of immigration. I mean, our job, our bread and butter, what we exist to do is to protect the American worker and advance their cause and make sure that they have good jobs with dignity. So there is nobody that's more concerned about looking out for the American worker than our organization. So I do share his concern and appreciate his concern. However, the legislation that's currently in front of the Senate really does represent a ground break in the area of compromise, legislative compromise. There have been so many different provisions placed into this legislation that we think will put a real vital check on what is happening right now. I mean, right now, absent a comprehensive immigration policy, the American worker is being penalized. The American worker is being victimized because we have this massive system of undocumented, unauthorized, and really, you know, underground labor, and that giant underground labor pool is serving to suppress wages for workers here in the U.S. and affords no rights and really low wages and poor working conditions for all of those folks that are part of that underground working pool. So what the legislation does, and I'm often surprised when organizations that are really concerned with immigration enforcement are not more supportive of this legislation. I mean, right now we are paying $18 billion for immigration enforcement. That is more than every other federal law enforcement priority combined. Unauthorized immigration, according to the Department of Homeland Security, has reached an all-time low. As a matter of fact, its net right now is zero. When you look at the deportations, we've had over 400,000 deportations last year. So when you look at deportations, people coming into the country, people leaving the country, it's at a net zero. So what does this bill do? For immigration enforcement, it requires a 90% effective rate for the Department of Homeland Security. $3 billion in budget – for enforcement of secure borders, the highest ever. There's an additional $1.5 billion to implement that $3 billion that's going to be used for infrastructure improvements, technology, what have you. And if in 5 years some of these benchmarks are not reached, there's an additional $2 billion in border enforcement. That is the most that the United States has ever spent on this issue.
Well, let me ask you guys this question, because Mr. Oliver, I want to jump back to you. You have argued that something like this is unnecessary and that the nation just needs to enforce the laws that are already on the books, right? I mean,
that's exactly right. You know, Marco Rubio and the Senator Rubio and the Gang of Eight, you know, they keep saying that this is de facto amnesty that we have today. And that's really a false choice.
And that's because we're not enforcing the laws, right? Not enforcing the laws
exactly.
Equals de facto amnesty.
In 1996, we had, you know, they talk about the overstayed visas. In 1996, Congress enacted a law saying that we would have an entry-exit program introduced and in force by 1998. They've been promising us that they would secure our borders since the last amnesty, and they haven't secured our borders. There's no political will in Washington to enforce the old laws, and these new laws won't be enforced as long as that culture is there, that there's no political will to enforce the law. And there really aren't any triggers in this thing, cutting off funding and so forth, that they're going to, you know, make these people toe the line and actually enforce our laws. I think we've had broken promises for over 25 years, and I think everybody that's trying to put forth this bill really lacks credibility that the laws are going to be enforced, because the political will is not going to change in Washington. There's going to be a continued demand for cheaper and cheaper labor. They're going to bring in all these work permits, over 20 million work permits, legalize the 11 million people. And then I would suggest to you that borders probably still aren't going to be secure. Our border security is actually, this brings us back. I mean, it doesn't move us forward. The present law requires gaining operational control of the entire border. The new law only sets standards for high-risk areas, and those are to be defined by the Department of Homeland Security, I guess. So I don't see things getting better under this bill, and I think that until they show us that they're going to enforce current laws and have the will to do that, I think they lack total any credibility at all.
I want to ask about this question from both of you, right? We have existing laws on our books that govern who can enter this country, who cannot. We already have laws on the books that outline what the process is. Why do we have to create a new law to enforce the old laws? I mean, you know, what do you guys see as getting, I guess, to the heart of the issue? Mr. Templin, go ahead.
Well, I mean, the problem when looking at public policy is that you can have enforcement provisions, but oftentimes those enforcement provisions are unenforceable because the systemic problem has not been addressed in that policy. And that's what we're seeing right now.
So what is the systemic problem?
The systemic problem is that United States immigration policy is based on a vastly different economy than what we see right now. You know, it was in the 80s and 90s, and then it accelerated under the George Bush administration, George W. Bush's administration, this idea of globalizing trade, globalizing capital. We saw, trade deals that were signed that allowed multinational corporations, many of those based here in the U.S., to be able to take their operations globally. So, for example, when NAFTA was signed, we saw the many U.S. corporations shift their manufacturing and other activities just south of the border into Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And we also saw agricultural policies as part of that displaced hundreds of thousands, if not millions of Mexicans and Central Americans from their own land, from their own agricultural land. So that gave them the incentive – not an incentive, that they were forced into these new factories and new establishments that were set up just south of the border. Well, then when those same corporations realized that they could get a cheaper labor pool in China and Southeast Asia, they shuttered all those facilities just like they did in the U.S. before that and moved those to China and Southeast Asia. So you now have all of this labor. They've got to find work. So we started seeing people come more to the U.S. for those work. And so the law has essentially become unenforceable because of that systemic problem. That is why this legislation is so critical, because it's the first time in decades that the U.S. has actually looked at immigration policy from a more systemic level and said it can't just be about enforcement. We've got to figure out ways to incentivize those folks that are working here in that underground economy to become part of the above ground economy. I mean, just here in Florida alone, 6.6% of our workforce is undocumented or unauthorized. That if we were to simply close the border and we had 100% enforcement, as Mr. Oliver is suggesting, we would lose $43.9 billion in economic activity in this state alone, with over 260,000 jobs.
You're listening to It's About Florida. We've been speaking with the Florida AFL-CIO's Rich Templin and Floridians for Immigration Enforcement's Jack Oliver. Templin says if the nation were to have 100% enforcement of its border rules, some 260,000 Florida jobs would be lost. Now back to our conversation. You're giving me a number here, but based off what? If the labor is undocumented, and the assumption goes, whether right or wrong, and the assumption goes that since the labor is undocumented, we don't know if they're paying taxes or anything else, why would we lose jobs if those people were to go away?
No, we absolutely do know that they're paying taxes. In Florida, over 70% of our general revenue budget comes from the sales tax. Mm-hmm. So even if someone is undocumented in the state of Florida, they still have to eat. Every time they purchase goods and services, they're paying a sales tax. A matter of fact, the amount calculated for money paid in sales tax by that 6.6% of the population that's undocumented is $737 million. That's money that's going into the state system right now, mm-hmm, that we are all benefiting from these workers. Additionally, because they are renting property, you would agree, they have to have a place to live, so they're renting property. That's allowing landlords and property owners to pay $69.5 million in property taxes. So even though they're undocumented, they are still participating in the economy. They are still part of the engine of that economy. And because they tend to be at the lowest end of the economic ladder, we know, and economists have told us over and over again, those are the folks that are actually more likely to put all of their earnings back into the local economy, right? They don't squirrel it away. They don't put it away in investments.
Because
they don't have anything extra.
Let me ask you this question. Mr. Oliver, yes.
Could I jump in and respond to that?
Yes, you can.
First of all, the money doesn't stay here in Florida that these people earn. Remittances to Mexico and these other countries is astronomical. It's in the billions of dollars. They send money home to family members. Now, if those jobs were done by Americans, and when I first started in construction down here in 1968, or in 71 when I moved down here, we imported labor down here to meet the needs of Florida businesses and construction industry, but we imported that labor from other states all around the country. I came from Ohio when the Rust Bowl dropped out, and I saw an ad down here in the Cleveland paper that they needed drywall finishers down in Florida. So I moved down here. I became a permanent resident. I paid my taxes. Now, the other thing that's not being taken into account for, that these people, the majority of these people, because they are the working poor, they pay sales tax, but they get public benefits. 62% of the illegal alien households in Florida get some type of public assistance, according to the Center for Immigration Studies. And that goes back, this is nothing more than corporate welfare. We end up subsidizing all these businesses that use this illegal labor to the detriment of the taxpayers in Florida. We spent billions of dollars educating the children of illegal aliens. billions of dollars on public benefits, and we've depressed the wages of Florida workers, and that adds to our welfare rolls as well, because we've created more working poor when you import this cheap labor. So I take a greatest exception to the fact that, you know, all the money stays here. It doesn't. More of the money would stay here if that money was earned by American citizens that live here. It would be spent on their families here in Florida. So I don't think there would be a loss in tax revenue.
And
it's still going to get done.
And I want to say that this particular, what we're talking about, which is the impact on wages and things like that, people have been going back and forth on this issue. There is no definitive study that tells us whether, you know, doing this would lead to an increase in wages or whether it would lead to a decrease in wages. But this is a very big factor in this conversation that we're having right now. So I do just kind of want to point that out as we continue on with our conversation.
Except for, you know, basic economic theory, you know, basic, I mean, just the grassroots basics of economics. And again, I find myself agreeing with Mr. Oliver's concerns because we have shared those concerns for a long time. I work with a lot of people in the building trade sector of our economy, and they've been raising those issues for years. But what we have found is that suppression of wages is because these workers that are here anyway are in this underground workforce. They have no standards that can be enforced. They have no way to complain. They have no – so if you have a job, I believe Mr. Oliver used the example of drywall finishers. I mean, we have seen that over the last decade all over Florida, where it used to be a skilled trade that paid well. And those wages have been going down. But that is because the unscrupulous contractors, the folks that Mr. Oliver is talking about, have been able to capitalize on this underground workforce, and that has suppressed wages for everybody. If you take those workers out and you put them in the light and you give them legal status and you give them the ability to insist on the going wages in the community, what you're going to see is a tide that lifts all boats, because you're eliminating the ability for these unscrupulous contractors to use that labor, to abuse that labor. And we're going to see wages begin to increase. And as wages increase, economic activity increase, more money goes into taxes, more goods and services are purchased. I mean, this really is a fundamental kernel that we can solve a lot of our problems by providing a path to citizenship and legal status for these folks that are here, that are working, that are doing everything society expects people to do, everything that we expect good Americans to do. These people are doing, but they're being abused by some who have been manipulating a broken system. This legislation fixes that system, and really the people who will be penalized are the unscrupulous contractors that Mr. Oliver just mentioned. And you know, there's every indication that there really is going to be an improvement, especially in the building trade sector, if you give these people legal status.
So, okay, that's
I disagree with that. You know, it doesn't matter whether you flood the market with cheap legal labor or cheap illegal labor. The end result is still the same. When you introduce more people in the market than there's jobs for, it depresses wages. You know, you can look at meat cutters. Meat cutters back in the 80s were making $18, $19 an hour. Now they're making $10, $11 an hour. When some of these meat packing plants were shut down up in the Carolinas, I believe, they said they couldn't get any labor. Well, when ICE went in and raided the plant and took all the illegal labor out, the meat packing plant had to raise the wages of those people, I think $3 or $4 an hour they offered in the paper. Within a week or two, all those jobs were filled by the people who originally did that, the blacks in the community. So flooding the market with 20 million more legal workers isn't going to help wages of Americans. It's going to continue to depress the wages. So the legality and illegality of this thing have very little relevance on it. All Marco Rubio is doing is substituting the millions of illegal workers. He's making them legal and then bringing in 22 million more legal workers to depress wages. We've seen that in the tech industry, in the engineering field. My brother-in-law has an engineering company up in Nashville, and engineers used to make about $70,000 a year when kids got out of college. Now they're importing legal labor from Pakistan and India and places like that. These folks come over here on a subcontractor basis, get no benefits. They work for about $35,000, $40,000 a year. No benefits, no paid vacation, no health insurance, anything like that. And those are legal laborers. And so our kids get out of college after they mortgage their future, spending tens of thousands of dollars in these STEM trades, and they get out and they can't find a job, or they're working for a lot less than they anticipated. So it's very destructive.
Let me, real quickly though.
Give me a second. Hold that thought. I want to tell our listeners what Mr. Oliver is just talking about when he's talking about these extra 20 million people. What he's talking about is a provision in this bill that would expand the visa program for both skilled and unskilled workers. Right now, the United States does have a program where, you know, people can come over here legally to do jobs. And this is the other side of the equation. This is that kind of high-skilled tech, you know, those are the kind of workers that we're talking about now on this side of the equation. So I just want to make sure our listeners are clear that we have switched to basically another issue within the same bill, and that is the expansion of the visa program. And with that said, Mr. Templin, go ahead.
When you talk about the H-1B visa and the other related visa programs, our organization couldn't agree more that right now that program is being abused, and it truly is. But part of this expansion is tightening that program, is putting new standards and safeguards in place. I mean, there are plenty of stories in Florida. For example, they were doing some port expansion in the Tampa area, and said that they had advertised and could find no skilled workers to work on that port project in Tampa. Now, we represent workers who do exactly that kind of work. And it was like, well, we never found out. We've got lots of people who would love to do that work. Well, we found out that the advertisements were placed in Alabama. The advertisements were placed in other areas of the Gulf Coast. So they were able to abuse that system because it has giant loopholes in it. Part of the expansion of this program is also closing a lot of those loopholes and tightening the system so that when you do, in fact, have folks coming into this country to do that work, it is truly because there is a deficiency. It is truly because there is a need. And there is no organization in the country that would like more than the AFL-CIO to see more investments in education, to see more investments in job training, to see more investments and you know, workers that are already here in the U.S. to take those jobs. But until those investments are made, something has to be done to fix the H-1B visa. And this legislation is a good first step at tightening that up.
Okay, but wait a minute. Let me
respond to that real quick. You know, one of the premises behind us, and I think it's a false premise, that there's a huge labor shortage in this country. And that just doesn't equate with the wages that are being paid. You know, middle-class workers across the board really haven't seen any pay increase for over 10 years. Now, typically when you have labor shortages, as they claim, wages go up. Well, if there was actually a labor shortage in this country, we would be seeing wages go up, not stagnate or go down. So this is just a false premise that there's this huge labor shortage across the board from STEM workers down to construction laborers and so forth. It just doesn't equate with the economics of the whole thing. You'd be seeing pay increases. That's basic economics 101.
This legislation is not perfect. There are a lot of things here that the labor community is concerned about, one of which is the expansion of the H-1B visa program. We have concerns with that.
I was going to say, because bringing in more people is kind of,
but we can no longer let perfection stand in the way of the good. We have got to do something to fix this broken system. This is the best attempt that has been made in decades, and it's something that really needs to move forward as rapidly as possible. And when you look at the economics of Florida and the demographics of Florida, any elected official, it would be pure folly to stand in the way of this comprehensive solution.
And gentlemen, we're going to have to leave our conversation there. I know that there's a lot more we can go into, but unfortunately, time prohibits us. Mr. Jack Oliver with Floridians for Immigration Enforcement and Mr. Rich Templin with the Florida AFL-CIO, thank you both for joining me here on It's About Florida.
Thank you so much, and thank you, Mr. Oliver, for the spirited discussion. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Same to you.
Thanks to our guests, Floridians for Immigration Enforcement's Jack Oliver and Rich Templin of the Florida AFL-CIO. You've been listening to It's About Florida, a production of WFSU-FM. I'm Lynn Hatter. Ryan Bank and Taylor Cox provided technical assistance. Please join us again next week for more discussion on the issues impacting our state.